Welcome to the Ithaca Radio Hour, a show about local news, views, and culture. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Today is Monday, March 10th, 2003. In this week's show, we are featuring two stories by Emily Shumway. First, we will hear her coverage of the March 5th student walkout at Ithaca High School. Later, we will also hear her interview with Linda Holzbauer, who counsels young men about their rights concerning the Selective Service Registry. Also in tonight's show, we have interviews with Jesse Kelso, a protester arrested at an anti-war protest at Pyramid Mall in February, and Alanka Wolk about some upcoming workshops for residents and police officers. At the bottom of the hour, we will announce some upcoming local events. But first, former State Assemblyman Marty Luster continues his series of opinion pieces, speaking about the lack of political vision in recent campaigns.
Remember when President George Bush the Elder faced criticism because of the vision thing? The question of vision, or if you prefer, core values, is one that should still be asked of those who lead us and those who seek to lead us. That discussion leads to an examination of some basic concepts and forces a discussion of some notions that we first encountered in Political Science 101. What do we understand is the proper role of government? What, in a democracy, is the relationship between government and the people? What role should government play in our economy, our natural environment, our personal liberties, our reproductive freedom, our personal relationships, our business undertakings, our travel, our religious beliefs and practices? To what extent should government direct the education of our children? And beyond that, and within that scope of authority, what should those policies be? How should government deal with the least fortunate among us, the aged and the frail, the poor and the destitute, the homeless, the ill and infirm, the abused, the battered, and the beaten? And what about those who are just getting by, but just barely, the working poor? Should government leave them without the assurance that their children are being properly cared for, or without access to health care, or without a secure safety net to catch them if they should fall? Asking these and similar questions of those in public office and those who seek such office forces those individuals to think deeply about their positions and to establish their priorities in a rational manner. In short, it's a good thing to insist that political leaders stand for something and that we all know what they stand for. With this in mind, let's look back over the recent so-called campaign for governor in New York. Let's start with this. Within 10 seconds, can anyone name a single issue that was discussed in detail by any of the three major candidates? I'm not talking about debates. I mean simple expositions by Pataki, McCall, or Golisano regarding their perceptions of how government should operate and their priorities and their strategies for reaching those goals. Now, Carl McCall is an honest, intelligent, and decent individual. He's not without core values. But where were they during the campaign? He would tell us that he had insufficient resources to get his message out. It's true that he had trouble raising money, but did that cause his failure to clearly articulate positions, to take bold and fresh directions, or was it the failure to do those things that resulted in a lack of contributions? Tom Golisano certainly didn't lack for money, but can you identify the central substantive ideas of his campaign other than the fact that he apparently doesn't like George Pataki all that much? And that brings me to George Pataki. Our governor doesn't suffer from a lack of core values. He has too many of them. He has left-wing values. He has right-wing values. He's pro-labor. He's pro-business. He believes that our schools overspend, and he believes that they are underfunded. He tells us his economic development programs are working just fine, and then 60 days later tells us that New York is facing the worst economic situation in its history. During the campaign, he refused to enter into meaningful debate with his major opponents and answered every criticism of his administration with a standard, "I'm proud of the work of my administration in fill in the blank." If Carl McCall's problem was an inept campaign and Tom Golisano's was an ego out of control, George Pataki's political career was born and is nurtured by political expediency. We have the right and obligation to insist that our candidates share with us their priorities and their understanding of the role of government. In short, their vision. and we have the parallel obligation as citizens to formulate our own political philosophy and to work within the political system to advance our priorities and our vision. This is good for ourselves, our communities, our country, and our democracy. This is Marty Luster.
March 5th was a nationwide student day of protest. Students in middle schools, high schools, and colleges across the country walked out of class to demonstrate their opposition to the war in Iraq. Emily Shumway attended Wednesday's protest at Ithaca High School.
On Wednesday, March 5th, approximately 600 Ithaca High School students and 100 alternative community school students gathered outside Ithaca High School to take part in a nationwide day of protest. The rallying cry of the day was "Books, Not Bombs," as the students expressed anger over the Bush administration's choice to increase defense spending while slashing education budgets.
We don't want your racist war! One, two, three, four! We don't want your racist war! One, two, three, four! We don't want your racist war!
I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what this war means in terms of your education, because this is really the reason we're out here today. When we go to war, we're going to spend billions and billions of dollars. This war is going to cost $100 billion. That is a lot of money. Do you know what they spend on education? They spend less than a third of that to educate everyone in kindergarten through 12th graders. That's how much they spend in a year. They want to spend three times that amount to go kill some people so they can drive around in their big pickup trucks and say yes to war. The Ithaca City School District fell $4 million short of their budget this year. That money is going to have to be made up in either tax cuts or loss of program to you guys. Bush wants to spend $8 billion, not million, every month to occupy Iraq after the war. Instead of doing that, we could spend money here, educate our children, give money to the poor so that everyone can be more equal and have a better life. Wants even more money for the military, and yet we have the largest military in the world. When you send your tax money to Washington, 50% of it goes to military budget. Do you know how much goes to education? 8%. That is pathetic. They spend five times the amount on war as they do on education. In New York State alone, they've cut $1.2 billion from education. Across the board, they want to cut overall, whatever, 3%, but they're cutting education budgets 8%. They're cutting education more than any other program. And why? Because they don't think young people care. That's pretty sad. How many of you guys think you'll be going to college in a few years? Do you know what? They're screwing over college kids as well. This is pathetic. In all SUNY schools, they're having at least a $1,000 increase in tuition at the same time that they're cutting scholarships for kids that need it. This means that only people like Bush, who happen to own oil factories and can support their kids, can go to college. Let's not talk about college anymore, because that's kind of scary. Let's talk about Ithaca High School right here.
Yes!
The administration is not letting outside media cover this. They're kicking them out right now.
Well, just a little update for you. This is how scared they are. They're throwing out the media because they don't want people to know that students have a voice. So, what I would encourage you to do after today is write letters to everyone that you know. Write to news agencies, write to your congresspeople, and let them know that students have a voice. They don't want to go to war. They don't want to see their friends die in an unneeded war. All right, so back to Ithaca High School. Most recently, the board had a meeting to talk about this $4 million shortfall. And do you know what they decided? They decided that
Oh, hell, if there's 35 kids in the class, that's okay because kids can learn when they're packed in. Is that right?
No!
They want to increase class sizes. That's ridiculous. Do you know what they also did? How many of you guys know about the Wise English program?
Yeah!
They're cutting entire sections of that because they don't have the money to pay for it. On top of that, the English department lost 4 teachers on Friday. They lost 4 teachers. What do you think about that? They also eliminated Parallax, which is the literary magazine, because they want people to be nice and dumb so that all you can understand is George Bush's rhetoric as he talks. They don't want you to learn. We're going to be sending around a couple people that have wonderful information about who you should send letters to. Okay, so we're going to send people around. Please take it. If you do take paper, please don't leave it, because then we've got to pick it up, and that's just not cool. But take this information, go home, discuss it with your parents, find out why they either do or don't support the war, and then take action about this, okay?
Okay!
I'm against the war because I'm concerned with America's, their response to these kinds of things. Like, America will go in and destroy a place significantly, and then they won't pick up the pieces. They'll just leave it in shambles for some other leader to come to power and do the same thing. Like, we do not care. As far as we're concerned, death statistics. So I'm just concerned because war is never a healthy thing. And I don't understand why it's an imminent danger either. Why Saddam Hussein, why we need to destroy him now? He's been there for 10 years now, and all of a sudden, because of Bush's personal vendetta, because he wants to pick up the pieces for his father, we have to go in and send innocent people to destroy even more innocent people. I think instead we should practice containment, wait out for the UN inspectors to do the job, and if that doesn't work, we can continue having talks, because war is never the answer. It never, like, in our economy, our education should come first. I'm really concerned with the cuts that have been going on lately. Like, really concerned, because some of the programs that they're cutting, the Latin program, the volleyball program, things that I am deeply involved in, and I don't want to see them go. I've been to the budget meetings, and I've sat around the round table with the people, and they've talked about what programs they're cutting because we don't have enough funding anymore. And I know that volleyball was something that really helped my life out, and the English programs, the Parallax Writing Magazine, I won an award last year for writing something in it, and I think that writing is such a powerful way to get across what we feel, and to cut it is just ludicrous. But it's all we can do because we don't have any money because Bush wants to spend it on bombs.
That was Emily Shumway. This is the Ithaca Radio Hour.
We've seized the treasury. You can't fight a war without money.
Oh, I see. So money causes war?
Absolutely. Money is the root of all evils, and war is the evilest. If it weren't for money, who would stir up revolutions and coup d'etat? If it weren't for money, traitors would have nothing to gain. You won't see one red cent, not one, as long as we've frozen your assets.
That was part of the March 3rd Ithaca performance of Lysistrata, one of over 1,000 readings worldwide that day in support of peace. Later, you'll hear Dave Davies and Brian Earle play music from the performance. A community-led series of workshops between police and citizens will begin Friday, March 14th. The workshops resulted from a series of meetings between Ilonka Volch and the acting chief of police, Lauren Signer, after Ilonka's experiences with police last summer. Ilonka was one of several women wrongfully arrested when participating in a top-free protest in DeWitt Park last July.
The workshops are mandatory for the entire police department, so all the police officers and staff will be attending these workshops, where they are voluntary for any other Ithaca residents to participate. So that is the difference, I guess, even though we will be all very closely sharing the interactions within the framework of the workshop. And what we are going to do is try to balance the number of police officers per each workshop, with the number of residents to really have balanced energy there. As well as the police officers are going to be invited to bring a support person for themselves, whether it's a friend or a spouse. And I think it makes sense considering that they're, you know, less invited to participate, but are going to anyways.
Together, Alanka and Acting Chief Signer worked out a plan for 9 workshops to be held from March 14th through April 7th.
You know, really hearing her side of the story made me realize how, you know, it's really not just the residents, that it really, you know, to make this, to improve the situation, it really would come from both the residents and the police.
The goal of these workshops is to provide a non-confrontational setting in which citizens and police can begin to break down the stereotypes that reinforce the concept of us versus them.
We have these 2 quotes on the flyers that we're using for the workshops. One says, "I don't want to be scared by the police in my town," and that's Ithaca resident. And the other one says, "I wish people wouldn't look the other way when I walk by," said by a police officer.
Tune in to upcoming editions of the Radio Hour for more coverage of the workshops. On Saturday, February 8th, people from Ithaca and the surrounding area gathered at the Pyramid Mall in Lansing to protest the possible war on Iraq. Jesse Kelso was among those gathered that day to express their beliefs.
I'm against any form of retaliation that hurts innocent people, and I believe that this war is going to hurt innocent people in our country, in Iraq, around the world. I think it's going to jeopardize the freedoms of the people in the United States. This whole war on terrorism is a war on our freedoms and should be labeled as such.
The protesters entered the mall dressed in black with anti-war and pro-peace signs on their clothing and shopping bags to walk a silent vigil through the mall. Mall officials sent security personnel to eject the protesters.
At this point, I asked them why. They said because they had the right to. It was a private mall, and anyone they didn't want in there, they had the right to tell to leave the mall, and that they did not want people in there, specifically for the reason that we were in there.
Upon being asked to leave by law enforcement, the protesters proceeded to the exits, but Jesse stopped, confused whether he was being arrested or told to leave.
I was arrested at that point. I allowed myself to be arrested because there was no possible direction for me to walk because they were standing there. They arrested me and took me out to the parking lot where there was about 5 officers involved in this, and one of them finally claimed me as their catch and took me back to a squad car, sat down, very friendly, wrote up my trespassing ticket, and told me I'd have to leave the mall.
This past week, an arrest at Crossgates Mall outside of Albany has gained national and international attention. Stephen Downs, the man arrested in that case, was wearing a pro-peace shirt, which he had purchased a few minutes earlier in one of the mall stores. The same day the story of Mr. Downs was spreading, Jesse was in court challenging his trespassing charge.
I believe it was the Perkins, the head of security at the mall, who stated that he thought I had a sign on my back and the front, which I only had a sign on the front. I was always under the opinion that he wasn't ever speaking about me personally. He was speaking about the protesters as a group. When he said things, he talked about protesters having signs on bags, protesters having signs attached to themselves, protesters singing and chanting. And I feel that I was prosecuted as a group, but still singled out as a single person. I think that is very unfair, and I'm hoping that the judge will realize this.
Jesse is currently awaiting the ruling on this case, expected next week. You're listening to the Ithaca Radio Hour. As war appears to be ever more imminent, and calls for reinstatement of the draft are once again ringing through the halls of Congress, interest surrounding the Selective Service is growing. Emily Shumway recently spoke with a local expert on conscientious objection and the Selective Service.
Linda Holtzbauer, a resident of Ithaca, New York, was recently trained to advise young men on their options in signing up for the Selective Service and on conscientious objection.
Young men are required by law to register for Selective Service, and many of them have questions of conscience about that, about actually being part of the military system even by signing up for the Selective Service. So we can talk to young men who have questions about that, who haven't decided, or who want to know what their options are.
The Selective Service is a governmental agency that collects the names of men between the ages of 18 and 25.
They're supposed to register because if there was a state of emergency, a database of all available young men would be there. And when I was of that age, when young men had to register, there wasn't any registering for the Selective Service because there had been previously so much opposition to the Vietnam War that that was dropped. But within a few years, when Reagan became president, he reinstated registering for the Selective Service. But many people do question, why exactly do we have to do this? You know, it's a good question to ask, and many people think that we shouldn't have to do it, or young men shouldn't have to do it.
But there are consequences to not registering.
There are some real punishments that young men have, and that is, you are not allowed to get any federal financial aid for college if you don't register for Selective Service. You're not allowed to get certain federal jobs. And if you become 26 and you haven't registered, then you will never in your lifetime be allowed to get federal financial aid, a federal job, or some federal jobs, or participate in certain federally funded training programs. So there are some real heavy-duty things. There are fewer ways for young men whose conscience is bothering them about registering. There are fewer ways to get out of it. But, in fact, I think it should be that young men shouldn't have to do anything that a woman doesn't have to do. And definitely registering for the Selective Service is one of those things. It means that we're constantly preparing for war, and we're constantly putting into the mind of a young man that they have to be available to fight for their country. And not everybody is willing to do that, and I don't think that we should force anybody to do it. Right now, though, the Bush administration talking about a war without end, I think that it is important to realize that there could very well be a draft at some point, and that many of us are thinking in that direction, and that's why more and more people are interested in learning about how they can help people who are conscientious objectors, how they can make a case for that. A conscientious objector is someone who opposes war in all its forms.
Because there is no draft right now, only people in the military can claim conscientious objector status. But if the draft were to begin again, people who are opposed to war could claim such status to avoid being drafted.
Now, many young men have decided that they will register for the Selective Service, but they want to set the groundwork for proving later that they're a conscientious objector, if it ever came to that, and they need it to do that. And so people will write on their form, their Selective Service form, they'll write in the white spaces, I am opposed to war in all forms, I am a conscientious objector, I am registering under duress, something like that. You know, this is against my will to register. And they'll send in the form, they'll keep a copy of it, and they'll send in the form to the Selective Service. And even though we don't know if that's legal, it is setting the, you know, setting the stage for that, if in fact somebody needed to do that later. But we do suggest that if somebody is considering, if they really think that they are a conscientious objector, that they should start doing what somebody in the military has to do, and that is write a list of what their beliefs are, how they've arrived at those beliefs, maybe what books they've read, if they've been involved in groups that have opposed war, if they've been at actions or participated in rallies or protests, all of those things you can write down, and that will help establish if you ever need to prove your beliefs in the future.
If you would like to learn more about conscientious objection or the Selective Service, or if you would like to attend workshops in Ithaca pertaining to these, you may call 607-387-8495 and leave a message. You could also visit the American Friends Service Online Committee website at www.afsc.org/youthmill for more information. Here are some upcoming events in the local area. Buses for the March 15th peace protest in Washington, D.C. will be departing from Ithaca's Green Street bus shelter at 2 a.m. Saturday morning and returning late Sunday night. Tickets are $45 round trip and are available at Autumn Leaves Used Books on the Ithaca Commons. For financial assistance, call Jim Semp at 533-4727 or email jimsemp@yahoo.com. That's J-I-M-S-E-M-P at yahoo.com. The Ithaca School District's proposed budget threatens to cut 3 full-time teachers of English as a second language. Community members are urged to attend the next school board meeting this Tuesday at 7 p.m. in the boardroom of the administration building. You can also email your comments on the budget to budget@icsd.k12.ny.us. Violence victims and families of offenders join together in a panel discussion of Justice Overcoming Revenge, Responsibility, Community, and Healing in Response to Violence. Panel members include David Kaczynski, brother of the so-called Unabomber, and Gary Wright, who in 1986 was nearly killed by one of Ted Kaczynski's letter bombs. That's this Wednesday at 7 p.m. in Myron Taylor Hall on the Cornell campus. This event is free and open to the public. The New York State Labor Religion Coalition holds its 8th annual fast for low-wage workers beginning Wednesday, March 12th at 8 p.m. and lasting for 40 hours until noon on Friday to call attention to the hotel workers' campaign for a living wage. According to the Living Wage Coalition of Tompkins County, the average wage for hotel workers is approximately $6 an hour. The fast will kick off with tabling on the Ithaca Commons on Wednesday, and organizers urge you to stop by to learn more about the Living Wage campaign. Voices for Peace, a fellowship of persons from many spiritual paths who share a common belief that among the most important religious teachings are those calling us to work for peace, invite you to a screening of Hidden Wars of Desert Storm, Monday, March 17th at 6 p.m. in Autumn Leaves.
Running a house is not the same as running a country.
Why not?
Well, because our budget goes for military spending.
Well, it's high time to stop that.
Well, what about national emergencies, then?
Oh, come now. We will find some solution.
You will?
Yes, we will.
Oh, well, then it's all over. We're doomed.
No, you're saved.
You lost your mind.
Such an attitude. You don't care what happens to the rest of us, how many die or what the cost, as long as you are the victors. Meanwhile, every day I'd hear news of wrong tactics, miscalculations, and estimated casualties.
The Ithaca Radio Hour is produced by Jesse Lind and Jeff Kirby, with help this week from Lara Ratzloff, Emily Shumway, and Brian Zemanski. This week's theme music is an instrumental version of Circus by Crow Greenspun. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week.
The Ithaca Radio Hour is looking for producers. If you're interested in producing a local story, email info@ithacaradio.org or call and leave a message at 607-273-0532. We hold open meetings the second Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. at Autumn Leaves Used Bookstore on the Ithaca Commons. The Ithaca Radio Hour is a project of Ithaca Community Radio and is produced at Rep Studio. For more information about ICR, visit our website at www.ithacaradio.org. You're listening to WEOS 89.7 Geneva and rebroadcast in Ithaca by Ithaca Community Radio on 88.1.